Hey everybody, it's Norm Farrar, aka The Beard Guy here, and welcome to another Lunch with Norm, The Rise of the Microbrands. Lunch with Norm. Well, it's Helium 10 week. I thought I'd wear my Helium 10 swag. Today, we're going to be having director of training and host of the Serious Seller podcast, Bradley Sutton. So we're going to be diving deep into keyword research, the do's, the don'ts, and everything in between. So Kelsey, where are you, sir?
Hello.
What is that you're wearing?
It's my fluffy sweater. It's freezing here. We had some issues, again, at the apartment, but we got around it, you know. We adapted, and now I got this nice sweater. So,
well, if you came back home once in a while, you could stay over here, and you wouldn't have to wear that.
Yeah, that's next weekend.
We're toasty warm here.
Yeah, I know.
That's next weekend. Okay. All right, are we doing a podcast when you're back here?
Same room?
That would be cool. There we go. All right. So what are we going to do? Are you going to do your job today? Are we going to be liking the smashes? What were you saying last time?
Yeah, I didn't even want to go back to...
You don't want to think about that? Okay, what are people supposed to do?
Okay, smash those like buttons. Get the word out about this podcast. Tag your friends. We've got an awesome giveaway today. I think you guys are going to really like this one. But before that, head over to the Amazon or the Lunch with Norm Facebook group. That is Lunch with Norm, Amazon FBA and e-commerce collective. That's where all the fun stuff is. And if you're looking for highlights, anything, full episodes, go over to our YouTube page. It's Norman Farrar. That's where everything is. Yes, Marina, I'm very cozy. Thank you. And I think that's pretty much it, except the Clubhouse. We have our weekly Clubhouse on Mondays at 1:30 p.m. Eastern time. So go head over there on Mondays. The event tab is available in the Facebook group right now. So the link is there. You can RSVP if you want, if you don't want to forget about it. But I think that's it.
Okay. So I think it's going to be a real awesome podcast. So if you do know any other people that want to listen to about keyword research, the do's and the don'ts, you know, please tag them, get them in. And also, by the way, if you tag two people, you'll be entered twice into our giveaway today. And we'll get into that in a second. But sit back, relax, grab that cup of coffee, enjoy the show. Welcome, Mr. Sutton.
Hello, hello, hello.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing just delightful. How's
that's
it going?
Good. Well, I thought you were going to start, you know, jiving and Zumba-ing to the song.
That's a really cool intro you have there. I love it.
You do? Great. I like it. Hey, in case people don't know you, can you give us a little bit, a little bit of background about what you're doing and what you're doing over at Helium 10?
Yeah, so... My position changes, you know, sometimes. That's the one cool thing about Helium 10. They allow you to kind of grow into different roles. But currently, it's Director of Training and Chief Evangelist. No, it doesn't have anything to do with religion, even though that's what usually people think about evangelists. But do you know the origin of that term, Norm?
I do not. What is it?
So I guess Guy Kawasaki, who worked for Apple for a while, he was the first one to kind of mainstream that. And it's kind of like... It's a, you know, something like, it's not necessarily brand ambassador, but it's like, you know, when you're out there doing podcasts or something, or you know, just trying to get the word out there about your company, you know, whether it's through the printed word or whether through its video or audio, then you're kind of like evangelizing for your brand. So that's what, like, he was the first mainstream person to have that, you know, title. He even wrote a book all about it. It's on Audible. I listened to it. It's pretty interesting. But that's the origin of it. So even you know Karen Thomas here, and of course, sure. Marcus, yep. Marcus, who's always next to you as a beard luxury level, or how luxurious the beard is. But they're both now brand evangelists as well here. So I was like, at first when they told me that, I was like, evangelist. I was like, well, what in the world? I'm like, that's weird. But now I guess it makes sense. But anyways, yeah, that's my position here. And I do the training videos, and I run all the case studies, and yeah, you know, I've worked here. It's hard to believe it's coming up on 3 years. Before then, I was consultant for Amazon sellers. So I was on the other side of the aisle here and launched over 400 products. And yeah, just been in this Amazon space, not as long as some, you know, about 6-7 years now, but I love it. I don't see myself ever getting out of this this space.
Yeah, I was watching Wicked Tuna the other night. Yeah, you know, something to do, and the complaining, and you know, oh, like a horrible season, and it just kind of, you know, I thought about the world in general and how awful it is that people were losing jobs, people going bankrupt, and you know, sometimes you feel really guilty because over the last year, you know, a lot of Amazon sellers or e-com sellers or service providers have exploded, you know, in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the one big thing I think you see in 2020 and 2021 that I don't know if anybody could have predicted, you know, there's some things that you can kind of predict, like, you know, when COVID started and everybody started buying online, you could probably say, oh man, there might be some inventory restrictions because Amazon warehouses are going to be full, or you might've been able to predict that, you know, things that you do at home are gonna boom, or there's gonna be more third party sellers. You know, you can make easy predictions like that. But the one thing that has really struck me is the aggregators, you know, like Thrasio and Perch and things like that. It's like they're like taking over the world. You know, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. That's an amazing thing. It makes so much sense. But it's like that just seemed to come out of nowhere. You know, like mm-hmm. in 2018. You heard about, oh, you know, maybe I'll sell my bread. I remember the big news is like 2019 maybe or 2018. It was it was a supplement company, Zhao Nutrition, and it was like big news. Zhao Nutrition sold for $20 million, and that was just like everybody was just like shocked, and I was like, whoa, that's so amazing. They were just like a third party seller, but now that's, you know, transactions like that are happening, you know, every day of the week, you know, yeah. at some of this company. So I think that's. That's something that seems to be big news now.
I remember, I don't know if it was 2013, around that time, there was a debate going on whether Amazon stores or brands through Amazon would even sell. Yeah. You know, there were people back then looking at flipping their business, but they're getting nothing. You know, it wasn't that great. But now you take a look at it. If you do it right and you you optimize your listing properly, you optimize your business properly, man, you can make a ton of cash fairly quickly.
Yep.
You know, that, and that's the thing about, that's another reason why I love the world that I'm in, is that, you know, you don't have to wait 10 years. You can start on Amazon or an e-commerce platform and, you know, you get out in 18 months, you know, maybe 24 months, but still sure. In 2 years, go from zero to nothing. Now that's fantastic. But today, we have a special giveaway that you don't do. You never do this. Well, if you do, it's very rare because I've never heard you do this. Mm-hmm. The giveaway today, why don't you announce it?
Yeah, so we're going to do a special giveaway. We don't even give this out, you know, when we do webinars, hardly. Actually, I don't think we've ever done this on a webinar. But we're going to give away a one-on-one consultation with me. You know, I like meeting with people, but... sometimes when it's like in group settings, you know, like whether it's at a conference or even just on a group Zoom, you know, people are kind of reluctant to really talk about what they're doing or show their product or things. But in a one-on-one setting, you can, you know, I'm not going to share your stuff. You know, we're not going to broadcast it live. So we're going to give away a one-on-one session with me, and then you can feel free to talk about anything you want. I'll look at your listing. I'll look at your product idea. I'll give you my sourcing agent. I mean, we'll no holds barred. Perfect. Only for you, Norm.
That sounds fantastic. So guess what the hashtag's going to be? I love Bradley. Hashtag I love Bradley. And you wanted I want, I know, but I'm going to throw I love Bradley in there. Anyways, feel free. Hashtag, if you want to just say I want Bradley, I understand. But I anyway. Okay, so I'm sure we're going to get a ton of people looking at that because, again, when you mentioned that, I thought that was really special. Thank you very much.
And if you take, what was it, two people?
Yep, you get an extra.
Two people, you get an extra vote, too. So.
Yeah, very good. All right, let's dig into this. This is a first for me. I get to talk to you. Usually it's the other way around, so this is kind of cool. All right. So we're going to be talking about keyword research and kind of, you know, digging into it and the do's and the don'ts. And like I said, everything in between. So why don't we talk about just general keyword research right now? What would you recommend? What's your style of keyword research?
Yeah. So, you know, it's important that people understand the what they're doing before they get into keyword research, or what's the point of what they're doing. This has nothing to do with Helium 10 or any software tool. It's just a conceptual thing. I mean, because tools like, you know, Cerebro and Helium 10 didn't even exist, you know, 3-4 years ago. It's not like people didn't do keyword research. You know, 8 years ago, no tools listed. People were still figuring out what keywords to put in their listing. So you got to understand the concept. And the concept is, at the end of the day, and this is my big thing, I especially focused on last year in trainings, is people need to understand that the buying process on Amazon. So like you Norm, do you buy things up there on Amazon, or do you have other websites you use, or what do you use?
To buy products,
yeah, as a consumer.
Oh, probably 90% Amazon.
Okay, so do you remember any of the last things that you
They you just bought? Arrived. I bought your mic.
Oh, nice. The Nano, the Yeti?
I thought that was a Shure.
Oh, the Shure, yeah, okay.
Yeah, that just
in the camera looks like a Yeti right there.
Which it is a Yeti. One. I'm okay. Replacing it. Kelsey's getting this. I'm getting cool. The Shure.
Oh, you know, yeah. Are you sure about? No,
I'm pretty sure.
So you know what? You actually bring up a good point. One of the last things, you know, a few months ago, I bought too was a microphone. And so the whole buying process for you, a need comes up. So for you, your need was, you know what, you know, my microphone sounds good, but I think it can sound a little bit better. Or I have FOMO because I see everybody has these Shure microphones, or whatever it was. There was a need that came up in your mind. And no matter if you know the exact brand or the exact product that you want, or you're not sure, an image comes up in your mind of what you think it might look like, you know, how much it might cost, you know, what the functions are. These things all come up in your head when you have a need. And then when it's time to go buy, it doesn't, like I said, it doesn't matter if you knew the name of the product or not. You have to translate that need or that image in your head into a keyword. Now, sometimes if it's an exact microphone like the Shure, you're going to type in Shure microphone. It's a keyword. But maybe you don't know. Maybe it's best microphone for podcasting. All right. Whatever it is, you know, we're not at the technology level yet where we can just transfer some image in our head into a Amazon search. So no matter what, you have got to translate your need into a keyword. And the important thing is that everybody's different. You know, you could have one product and you could have 100 people and there might be at least 50 to 75 different ways that people are going to describe that product to search for it. So at the end of the day, if you can take nothing else from this episode here, is just remember the purpose of keyword research is you are trying to identify all of the potential keywords that your target audience could possibly use to look for and buy your product. And a mistake that a lot of Amazon sellers make is they think they know their product really well, and you should know your product really well, but they just rely on their own, you know, their own knowledge. Like, all right, this microphone is going to be podcast mic, and maybe some people might call this expensive podcast mic or something like that. And then they just rely on their own knowledge. But you have to understand that the majority of people probably don't search like you. You know, if you think you're a professional searcher, great. But I guarantee there's people who use very strange terms, mm-hmm. you know, even other language terms. And so that's the goal of keyword research is, hey, what are all the possible ways that somebody could be who would be looking for a product like mine would use to describe it? Because I got to get those in my listing so that I can at least show up in the search results.
So how do you get to that point? So like, for example, bully sticks. I know bully sticks. I thought I knew bully sticks like, you know, the back of my hand. And then for me, I started looking at competitors. And I actually extracted this from using a Helium 10 tool, Cerebro. Pizzle. What the heck's a pizzle? But it's another name for bully stick. And it turned out to be really great. Watch. Kevin King's going to be doing, and he's going to hear this. But we both sell bully sticks. But anyways, pizzle turned out to be a really great keyword for us. Not a ton of sales, but we were able to extract those sales that nobody else was targeting. It was no competitors on it. Pizzle. Who would have thought?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and there's always things like that, that happen. So, and then even you do the best keyword research, it's not the end of the day. You know, keyword research is an ongoing thing. Your PPC, if you have auto and broad campaigns going, those are going to discover even other keywords that you're like, this has nothing. You know, let me know in the comments, guys. How many of you guys have you know, you've been selling on Amazon for a while, and you take a look at your auto campaign search reports, and you're looking at keywords that you actually got conversions for. Not only did you get an impression for, but you know, somebody saw that, they clicked on, they bought, and you're like, what in the world? Why in the world would somebody buy my product after searching, you know, for this? But that's the beauty. And then so later on, it's like, okay, well, maybe I need to put that keyword in my listing to even optimize further for it.
Without using the app, how do you do competitive analysis to find these different keywords?
Well, there's different ways. You know, there's different ways. So the first way, you know, like let's say somebody didn't have Helium 10 or any other tool, is, you know, the way that people did it back in the day is they would just start, you know, type. You could probably know what the main keyword is, or at least the root word is, almost always. So people who don't have tools, you know, people would just use the autocomplete. You know, they could use the autocomplete there on Amazon. And something new that has come up, again, that doesn't require the use of a tool, is you type in the main keywords, you know, like coffin shelf on Amazon. You scroll all the way to the bottom, and that usually is better than autocomplete. It gives you like 5 related keywords. You know, that according to whatever Amazon is using for their algorithm, these are like, you know, the keywords that if somebody searched coffin shelf, either they before this or after this, they also search these other keywords, you know, and there's stuff that doesn't come up in autocomplete because there's sometimes completely different words. If you type in coffin shelf, the only things that come up in autocomplete are the stuff that start with like coffin shelf. But if you go all the way to the bottom, you'll see like gothic decor or things like that, that would never come up in autocomplete. So that's a great way to get some good keywords. Another thing that you could do if you're not using a tool is if you have brand registry, and I highly suggest to everybody, even if they're just getting started, unless you're just looking for the next fad like fidget spinner or something like that, well, maybe you don't need brand analytics, but I would always suggest getting brand registry so you can get brand analytics, because you can at least see, you know, for your competitors, which ones that they're dominating the clicks on and if they're getting purchases from there. So that's another great way. For me personally, I launched 40 products last year as case studies. And a lot of these products, I have a unique way of doing product research, and I kind of go against the norm, no pun intended. But what I do is I like getting into niches like the coffin shelf where there is zero competition. Like, and that's, you know, my ceiling is kind of capped because, you know, these things are selling like 5, 6, 7 units per day. But for me, it's a great sandbox for doing my case studies because I'm able to just almost do whatever I want there because there's no competition. So the way that I get my ideas is from Etsy and Pinterest a lot. Okay. So usually,
you're talking about your Project X.
Project X is one, but that's just 2 products. I did another 35 products last year using the same methodology from Project X. Yeah. Yeah. Where we find stuff that's trending off of Amazon. And so if you find something that's trending on Etsy and that's what you're going through, by definition, using this method, I can't use Helium 10, you know, for my keyword research because there's no competition on Amazon that exists. Sure, I can look at the search volume and you know, I do look at the search volume and things like that there. But as far as what are the keywords that drive sales? Well, your number one way of knowing that you don't have, because you can't look at any competitors, whether you're talking brand analytics or Helium 10, to see. So this is what I do. If they're selling well on Etsy, all I need is 1 or 2 or 3. I go on the Etsy and there's this little trick I use to see what are the popular products. I first can click on their sales. You know, not everybody on Etsy knows how to hide this. Like more than 50% of sellers on Etsy don't even know that all of their sales are exposed to the world. Like a certain feature. Yeah, it's a certain feature that you have to use to hide it. So, like, for example, if you guys go to the Project X Etsy store, you know, type in how cool is that? I think that's what it's under, or coffin shelf, and find our coffin shelf. And then you see our store name is how cool is that? You click on the store name. And once you get to our storefront, everybody has this. It says number of sales. Now, what everybody doesn't have is the ability to click on it. So we left it open. We don't care if people see how many sales we're making. But most sellers are like that. They don't even know that they can turn that off. But if you click on that, that is a real-time tally of every single one of that Etsy store sales since the beginning of time. So you keep like be following that every day and know which products that they're selling. So anyways, you'll know if this is a hot selling product. You know, there's obviously no X-ray, helium 10 X-ray yet for Etsy. So that's like a way to know the sale. So then you look at that, what's the popular product? And then when you click on the page, of course, you know, look at their title, just things like you would do on Amazon. What's the main keyword they're doing there? But if you scroll to the bottom of the page, there's this thing that says related keywords. And a lot of people are under the mistaken assumption that that's like some Etsy algorithm or something, kind of like similar to Amazon at the bottom of the search page where it gives other words. No, those are the words that the Etsy seller has highlighted as the most important words to their listing. In the back end of an Etsy listing, it asks them to put their most important tags, right? So it's kind of like the search terms in an Amazon listing, you know, that nobody would ever see. But you can actually say, all right, here are the 12 keywords that this Etsy seller has tagged as their most important keywords. And so, boom, there's a good starting point there. So all of this, guys, without the use of Helium 10 or any tool, just stuff that anybody can do right now.
That's crazy. I had no idea about that. I do know that a lot of people are having success with Etsy right now. But another, just a quick tip on the autofill. One of the things that I know that we do is that before we start typing, we hit the space bar and then type in the name, and then you'll have a bunch of long tails that come down, mm-hmm. which you know helps us out when we're doing long tail rebates or if we're doing some sort of giveaway or a search find buy. Okay, so let's talk about mistakes.
Sure.
What are people doing that are causing them to either lose sales or just basic mistakes?
Mistakes, I mean, some people might think these are just boneheaded or simple, but I mean, I've seen experienced sellers do it. So again, the one thing we already mentioned is making sure that, you know, you're not just relying on your own knowledge to put keywords. The other thing is you might have the best keyword research ever, and then you don't actually put them in your listing. You know, so like, what in the world are you like? You did all this research, and then you just assume that Amazon is going to index you for this keyword. You know, another mistake that some people do is not putting their most important keywords in phrase form. And the most important keywords usually is not that many. You know, you'll get a good 80% of your sales, if not more, from like 10, 15 keywords. Now, you still don't want to neglect all the other hundreds of potential keywords, but the big majority of your sales is going to come from a core number of keywords. And it's important to have those in phrase form because when you first start your listing, it's going to help you, once you get interaction with those keywords, you're going to be able to rank a lot faster for it as opposed to if Amazon's just piecing together these phrases from different parts in your listing. You know, like if the words is hydrolyzed collagen peptides, you know, you got collagen in your title, hydrolyzing your bullet points and peptides in your description. Sure, you'll be indexed for it, but Amazon might not view you as very relevant because that keyword's not in phrase form. So that's important. Another thing that people make a mistake on it is they think keyword research stops once your listing is live. Like I'm good. You know, a perfect example of this I saw was this trending product, and I think it actually might have turned out to be an adult product, but whatever it was something that just got invented like 3 years ago, right? So at the time, they did what they were supposed to do, and they looked at their initial keyword research, and the number one keyword was blank, blank, whatever this product was. If I remember the word, I probably couldn't even say it out loud, but blank, blank for beginners. It was something like, you know, 15,000 keyword, and then there's just the core keyword, the blank, blank part was, you know, like 5,000 because it was some new trend or something, right? So they did that and then they kept going and then they came to me a year later, like, man, my sales keep going down and down and down. I was like, well, have you looked at, you know, the keywords? Because things change as far as trends. And they said, no. So when we looked at it again, that blank, blank for beginners was now only like maybe 2,000 search volume. And then all these other keywords had come up, like the main keyword. Now, all of a sudden, that was the number one. And then there's these new ways that people were using this product, and these made other keywords. And then those were all had search volume. Some of those they didn't even have in their listing. So, you know, I'm not saying, hey, guys, do keyword research every single week and redo your listing. No, you actually shouldn't do that. That's going to mess up your you're listening. Sometimes that screws up the Amazon algorithm. But, you know, every few months, you know, do a deep dive into your keyword research. Look at what you're converting for. Look at what your competitors are converting for. And I guarantee every single time you do that, there's probably going to be a couple keywords that you didn't even realize were relevant to your listing that maybe have just popped up. And then, yeah, go ahead and you know, stick those in your listing. Just make sure when you do that, you're not taking away things that that are important for your listing. Like maybe your number one keyword is coffin shelf, and like, ah, I'm going to take that off and replace it with a Gothic decor or something. You know, you don't want to de-index you for anything, but definitely add keywords down the line that that are relevant for your listing. Don't make that mistake that other sellers do, where they think, oh, the journey's over, you know, once my listing's live.
So I've got to ask you about setting up your listing. So I've heard everything, 20, 30 different styles of setting up your listing. But I've heard recently that never repeat a keyword. Now, I heard this in the past. I'm hearing it a lot more now. Short titles, shorter bullets, relevant keywords in the search terms. Never repeat a keyword. And your main keyword phrase would be in your title, of course. Mm-hmm. But then I've heard people say, and this is the way it was for the last 2 years, is repeat the different keyword phrases. You know, have different keyword phrases throughout your listing, throughout the back end, in subject matter, which is now taken away for most categories. Mm-hmm. What do you suggest? What have you seen?
I still think, at least in the beginning, you should repeat those main phrases, because again, in that the first couple of months of a listing, you're fighting with the algorithm to try and make sure that they know you're relevant for it. And so, I mean, just naturally, keywords are going to be repeated. I mean, if you have a collagen peptides listing, it's impossible to only have collagen peptides in your listing once. I mean, your listing is going to look pretty weird if it's only there once. It's just natural, you know, that hey, you know, collagen peptides is in the title, and then down here is like, you know, our collagen peptides comes from pasteurized whatever cows, whatever the heck. I mean, it would be weird if you didn't have collagen peptides more than once. So that's not necessarily a bad thing. Now, what happens is, like, I think as the listing matures, you don't have to have it repeated, because if you're already ranking on the top of page one, theoretically speaking, you know, you remove one of them, it's not going to make a big deal. Amazon gives conflicting information, and that's why people get confused. You know, like if anybody has brand analytics and brand registry, and you have access to this feature called search term optimization, and that's like something that you can control your back end search terms from your brand registry dashboard. And it's actually interesting. First of all, there's just a side note. If anybody has brand registry, use that to do your search terms, because you get about 40 more characters, because in the regular listing, you only get up to what, so 249 or 250 characters you can do. But in that part of editing it, it doesn't count the spaces. So on average, you'll get another 40 to 50 characters of real estate that you can put into your search terms.
Nice.
But what that actually will tell you is like, hey, don't put this keyword here because you've already got it somewhere else in your listing. Now, again, I say ignore that in the beginning, but later on, if you did have those duplicates, you can probably go ahead and remove it from the search terms, just like it's telling you. But, you know, even now, you know, if you were to message, I even tested this a couple months ago where it took me a few times to get a rep to say it, but they still say it, some of them, where I was, I had a keyword in my listing and it wasn't really, not even in the top seven pages, wasn't ranking at all. And I just, you know, I opened up a case and I'm like, hey, you know, I'm not really showing up for this keyword. I know I'm indexed for it. Is what advice can you give me? And they'll say, do you have it in your search terms? And I said, no. And they'll say, go ahead and add it there. And, I mean, they knew I had it in the rest of my listing, but they're like, go ahead and add it. In other words, duplicate that keyword. And then sure enough, it put me to like page six or page seven. You know, I'm not going to get any sales from it, but it just shows algorithmically that Amazon still looks at sometimes duplication for whatever relevancy thing that they're doing. So I would say yes, duplicate, especially in the beginning, but as the listing gets older, it does not become as critical for you to do that.
Very good. Hey guys, if you're liking what you're hearing, please, like Kelsey says, like the smashes. And, you know, hit the subscribe, invite people over. And I just wanted to, again, just let you know what the giveaway is today. Bradley is going to be doing a one-on-one session, which he doesn't do. So it's one-on-one. If you like what you're hearing, it's hashtag I love Bradley. Or if you get an, or what is this? If you get a, you'll get a second vote if you tag two more people. How's that? All right. And now, did I say that okay, Kels?
You did. I also just threw in another thing. If you share the video out, you'll get another two votes. We're feeling generous today. So.
Oh, there you go. All right. All on Bradley's time. Okay. Now let's go back to some of the questions. I've seen a few coming through here. Kels, can you start throwing up some?
Yeah. So the first one is from Dr. Cause. Is it true less keywords on the back end of an Amazon listing would have more weight? I heard more often not to jam-pack the keywords. Any thoughts?
I haven't tested that recently. I mean, to me, it's always been in this information, like, what, a year and a half ago, actually leaked out of Amazon, where the search terms is second most important to the title. So, but if I have only 50 keywords in there as opposed to 250, like, does it have more weight? That's an interesting case study. I've never seen anything out of Amazon or anything in my own studies that say one way. I try when possible to maximize it, just because that real estate is so valuable, and it's not like, it's not too much. Remember the Norm remembers the days where it even opened up to 5,000 characters you could do back there. But yeah, that'd be something to interest, but or something interesting to test. But for now, I try and max it out.
You know, based on that, what about the bullet points? Are you keeping to smaller bullet points with just more user engagement or benefit feature and just very short? Or are you writing those 500 characters?
I never do the 500 characters. And the reason is it, to me, that's not attractive. Like, if I'm looking as a buyer, and that's one thing, again, that there's talking about the mistakes that Amazon sellers make, is that people sometimes think too much like sellers and not like buyers. And they think about, oh, algorithm and indexing and relevancy and all this stuff. And they're like, yeah, I got to put as much as possible because it'll get me great juice. But at the end of the day, it's not the Amazon algorithm that's buying your product. It's a normal person. And if I see a listing, there's like 7 bullet points and each one has 5, I'm like, okay, you know what? This is too much to deal with. Let me go to the next listing. That's like not attractive to me. So that's the reason why I don't do, you know, 500 in the bullet points. Now, back in the days, you know, they used to cap it at, I think it was like 1,000. So like, you could go more than 1,000, the bullet points, but for indexing, sometimes if you go more than 1,000, they wouldn't index you. Now, I think that has changed. That's another thing I haven't tested, but, as you mentioned, subject matter started going away for a lot of categories. And in a lot of those categories that subject matter went away, you got added extra bullet points or like the ability to do up to like 10, 12 bullet points.
Yeah.
And so in my opinion, I can't imagine that they still would have a 1,000 character cap on indexing on the bullet points, because, you know, those are like 75 character bullet points, you know, if that was the case. So for me, it's kind of like what I go by, what Tomer Rabinovich. Have you ever had him on the show?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He's Tomer, great. He teaches something called, looking at the niche theme. And that's like, look at what the others in your niche are. The successful ones, look at the structure of their listing. Do they have long titles? You should go ahead and do a long title. It obviously works. Do they have short titles? Do a short title, because that's what seems to be more attractive to people. Same thing with the bullet points. Do they have long bullet points? You know, do they have short bullet points? Do they only have 3 bullet points? Do they have 8? You know, go with what is already proven to work in your niche and proven to be okay to your target market. And that's kind of like how I go about it, as opposed to targeting just without looking at that, just like some exact number of 300 characters or 100.
Great point. All right, Kels.
Just give me a second.
Sure.
A ton of questions coming through. Okay, from Jeffrey Anderson. Bradley, do you know of a list of restricted keywords not allowed to be used in the listing?
Yeah, that's a great question, but the short answer is no. Amazon, unfortunately, hasn't published it. I mean, you kind of know it's like drug-related keywords and, you know, some swear words and things like that. But I wish that Amazon would publish a full list. Another thing that people don't realize is branded keywords as well are kind of forbidden keywords for if you don't have that brand. You know, like I talked to a seller 2 years ago, put the word fart or something like that in the listing. That's actually a branded term, and he got his listing suppressed for it. Like, what? Somebody has that trademarked, somebody trademarked the word fart, but sure enough, they did. So if you use a trademark, it doesn't even have to be a brand. Obviously, all brands are almost all trademarked, but just if somebody trademarked a word, like, who knows, you know, isn't LeBron James trying to trademark Tacos Tuesday or something? Like, if that goes through, theoretically speaking, then if somebody sees a Tacos Tuesday in an Amazon listing, that trademark owner can go and report that to Amazon, you could get removed. So just drug related keywords, you know, cuss words, and trademark terms, just try and stay away from those. But unfortunately, Amazon hasn't done a list, because that's thousands of keywords, you know?
Yeah. And there's also, we've run into this a lot with free. So non instead of free, the 100%, the guarantee, the satisfaction. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, there's certain things that Amazon will just slap you with, and the anti. So we've been going with my clients, we've been going through, it's been crazy with antibacterial, anti this, anything that is, could look like it's PPE related, they're getting suppressed, suspended. But anyways, yeah, I agree. I wish that we could get something like that. And also,
then we'd build that into the tool, and then
yeah.
We'd be able
to
like give you a notice, like, hey, be careful, you know.
One of the things you can do, it's not going to tell you, you know, right off the bat, but one of the things that you can do to help improve your ability to have the listing up is check out the style guide. Style guide is, you know, going to let you know at least, like, I see a lot of people breaking a lot of rules, and it's all just minor things, but, you know, how does that weigh against, you know, the guy that, if two people have the exact same listing and one listing is doing a bunch of minor TOS issues, I don't know about you, but logically, I would think the other listing would be promoted before the other one that's breaking minor TOS issues.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about that, but anyways. Okay, Kels, next.
Okay, next one we have from Simon. Let's say those 75 keywords from those 100 people are being used by 100 sellers. How does Amazon decide who wins?
All right, so 75 keywords from those 100 people are being used by, I mean, are we, if we're just talking about, you know, there's 100 sellers who are using the 75 same keywords, and if you mean that by Amazon winning is who Amazon picks to win is who's, you know, ranking towards the top, or if you're talking about PPC, you know, those are different subjects, but let's just assume that you're talking about, like, who is Amazon going to prioritize in search results if everybody has the same keyword? Well, it's who has more interactions, you know, on your listing from that keyword. Yeah, and we're not only talking about purchases. I mean, Amazon, I mean, of course, purchases are the most important, but there are so many different factors. I mean, Amazon's even looking at things like, all right, somebody searched for this keyword and they clicked on this listing and they spent a lot of time on this page. Maybe they didn't even buy, but Amazon is actually reading, you know, that kind of data. So it's interactions with that keyword, because at the end of the day, we got to remember, how does Amazon make money? Amazon makes money either from a click, you know, because they saw a sponsored ad, or Amazon makes money from a purchase. All right. So what they're trying to do is they want to show the products either in sponsored ads or organically as high as possible, the ones that give Amazon the best chance to make that money. And so how do they know what's going to give them the best chance of making money? It's who's made the money in the past for those keywords. So that's how they it kind of works.
Yeah. And remember, when you're ranking, let's say you're one of those people that have those 75 keywords in your ranking, and maybe a bunch of you are on page one. Well, nobody can force anybody to click your listing. If your listing sucks, nobody's going to click on it. So, you know, check out that. We talk about the Brady Bunch effect. You know, take your competitors, make sure that your listing looks good, your primary or your hero image looks the best, stands out equal to or better than your competitors.
Okay, next question. Does Helium 10 use also the keyword data from Google and other platforms, or is it only the search data inside Amazon?
Well, if we're looking, if you're talking about like, you know, the search volume and things like that, you know, that's based on Amazon searches. Now, we do actually have Google data in Helium 10. You know, that's in the Trendster app where you can like kind of overlay Amazon BSR and then take a look at that keyword of how it looks on Google Trends. So in that sense, yeah, we have some Google data.
Okay. Manny, can you explain in detail what the number in the CPR column in Cerebro refers to?
Sure. So the CPR number is basically a formula that Matt, your namesake, Manny Coates, came up with, you know, years ago of when people were doing discounted purchases, you know, based with two-step URLs in order to get to page one, approximately how many of those discounted purchases over 8 days you would need to give you the best chance to get to page one. A lot of people are using full price buys, you know, now, and they're using rebates and different things like that. So it's the number that's actually needed is a lot less. And, you might be seeing a kind of big, update on that over the next couple of, months. I don't know. You heard about that first here on the lunch with, Norm.
All right. And, let's see, Fatiha, a keyword with 4,000 searches is my main keyword. Should I be targeting this word at launch or focus on smaller long tail keywords then move up?
It depends. You know, this is something that Tim Jordan talked about in when we did Project X. You know, he called going for that big keyword, the storming the castle. And then he talked about the those longer tail ones is like storming the beach. You know, if you're an invading army coming over water, you first go for the beach first and then you storm the castle. Now, at the end of the day, there's no one answer that answers everything. It depends on if you think you can organically convert once you get to page one. So, for example, if I was trying to do collagen peptides where everybody's got a million reviews, sure, I bet I can get to page one within 1 week, you know, using different launch methods. But I guarantee you I'm not going to stay on page one because once I get to page one, my listing is ugly compared to everything else, you know, with a lot of reviews and a lot of history and things like that. I'm going to fall off of page one because my conversion is going to be bad. But if you're in some kind of niche, like we with the coffin shelf, you know, with the coffin shelf, our main keyword was coffin shelf. It was like, you know, I don't know, 10,000 search volume at the time. We were absolutely just fine going after that right off the bat because we knew there were so few coffin shelves on there or the competition was so bad or their price was all like double ours or whatever that we knew without even any reviews, all we need to do is get to page one and we're going to get the organic conversions right away. So you got, you know, that might be the case with you, Fatiha, or it might be something else. So you just got to take a look at the competition and then just ask yourself, hey, if I got to page one, would I convert? And here's the thing that you can do too. Don't just go with what you think. You know, poll your family members if they don't know what your brand is. Like, hey, which of these would you get? Or do a pick foo. You know, do a pick foo. Just like take two of the three of the top listings there on page one, and then put like a thumbnail of yours without reviews, and then say, hey, if you search for this keyword, which one of these would you buy and why? And then if 98% of people say the other ones, and then they say because this one has no reviews and I would trust this one more or whatever, well then, you know, maybe you should wait to get some reviews before you make that push to get that one to page one.
Great.
Okay, awesome. Also, if you guys haven't done it yet, please like this video. And yeah, if you did share the video, please just comment done. Sometimes privacy settings, we can't see who actually shares the video. But once you do that, you'll get an extra 2 votes. Let's see, this is from Gideon. What is your thought about the brand name in the title? Should it be in the end or in the beginning?
Yeah, Amazon wants it in the beginning. So that's just like, you know, if you don't put it in there, it's not like an automatic suspension. If you put it at the end, it's not like an automatic suspension or suppression or anything like that. But I have seen more and more people get slapped on the wrist by not putting it at the beginning. And what happens is they don't even get suppressed necessarily, but well, then Amazon goes in there and they change the title to what they want it to be, which is at the beginning. And then once they've done that, a lot of the time, now you can never change your title again. Like it's like a
lock. They lock it.
Yeah, they lock it. So like I always suggest putting it at the beginning.
Very good.
Okay, we got a couple more still, but is it advisable to have your own store on Amazon with few products?
Yeah, I mean, if I only have one product, as you know, I'd still make a storefront. So if that's what you mean, like I would get brand registry so I can have a storefront. It's going to give me some, you know, capabilities with other kinds of advertising on Amazon. And it gives me another URL that I can promote, you know, like that URL of your storefront will start getting indexed also in Google. And you could send traffic, you know, to there. Amazon loves, you know, outside traffic. Remember, guys. So yeah, I mean, whether I have one product, three products or 20 products, if I've got brand registry, I will make a storefront for it.
And by the way, when you're sending traffic over to your storefront, it's so much more attractive than just having hero graphic, you know, with a white background.
Yeah.
It looks so much better.
Okay. This one, why Jungle Scout and Helium 10 have a huge difference in their sales estimate? Sometimes it can be more than 500%.
Yeah, what I always say, I mean, I don't even care if Helium 10's in the conversation there, is never compare two tools. Because that's kind of like a meaningless comparison. You know, like Helium 10 is this, tool B is this, tool C is this, tool A is this. The reason why I say that's a meaningless conversation is what matters is what tool A XYZ is compared to Amazon. All right. So if you don't have that one constant, there's no purpose comparing the two. The illustration I always use is weather stations. You know, if I don't know what the real weather was, you know, we could have Channel 10 always predicts that or channel 10 predicts X degrees or that there's going to be rain. You know, channel Y predicts this many degrees. Well, the conversation of, oh man, why is it so different? There's nothing beneficial that could be got out of that conversation, because if you don't know what actually did happen, you don't know which one was more accurate. So what is the better conversation to have is, hey, how come channel 10 you know, always says it's going to rain and every single day it doesn't rain. Well, that means that it's not very accurate. So I say just pick one tool. You know, like I don't care even if somebody has another tool, one of our competitors, don't get Helium 10 if you're going to keep with your own tool. Just stick with your own tool, because if you think that you are smarter than all of the data scientists that every single tool, including Helium 10, has, and that you've come up with a better way to estimate sales, because I'm going to throw up this Chrome extension and I'm going to throw up this one, and I have this little formula that I do a mixture. No, I mean, if that was more accurate, I'm sure one of these tools would have done that. So never compare two tools, guys. If you have Amazon for your own self and you want to have like five tools, and then you say, hey, I'm going to compare my data with Amazon, that's what matters. And so that's my advice there.
Yeah, I like to add, and I've had that question a lot, but I use a tool as guidance. So if I'm using, like, let's say the Jungle Scout compared on its own, I'm looking at it as guidance, Helium 10 as guidance. So it gives me the opportunity to say, forget the volume, but I know that there's fairly good volume here. You know, if I'm using the tool, but that's all. Other than that, all the other functionalities of whatever tools that you're using, you know, that's taken into consideration. But I believe it's like listening to 10 different gurus, you know, you're going to get a little bit different angles of where you're coming from. So just, Bradley, you're bang on. Pick a tool.
Okay. Let's see. From Nathan, how would you discover keywords for a product you are repurposing?
So then you got a product already, I'm assuming, Nathan, you're talking about, and then now you want to like maybe cross promote it into a different niche or something. Well, okay. So in that case, you know, maybe the competitors aren't similar to yours, but still, if you think that you're relevant to a certain keyword or a certain niche, in this situation, yeah, I'd go ahead and analyze the products that are performing for that niche, you know, even if it's very different, you know, than my product. And yeah, I would be able to pull some keywords from there. I actually suggest doing that regardless, you know, even at the beginning is study the step A never changes is, hey, the competitors who are most like yours, you know, you want to get those keywords, but then look at the frequently bought together. You know, Helium 10 and Black Box shows that you can enter in a ASIN in Black Box for product targeting, and you'll see the history of all the products in the last month that showed up as frequently bought together. And some of them are different, you know, like people aren't just, you know, it's not like this pen is always going to be frequently bought together with this pen. No, it's this pen is always going to be maybe frequently bought together with like a notebook or something. All right. So if you are making the pen, go ahead and do some keyword research on the notebook so that you can have some keywords that convert for this, and that'll help, you know, the relevancy to this niche. But then also you might start getting ranked for some of these notebook keywords, because guess what? There's history that somebody who's searching for a notebook, eventually they're going to buy a pen anyways. So if your pen starts coming up on these notebook searches, either in PPC or organic, you can get, you know, you can get a couple, you're not going to, you know, retire off that, but you can get a couple sales a week here or there from that.
Relevancy.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right, Cade or Aid. I'm getting old. That's my other son.
Okay. Trying to get everyone in.
Okay.
Okay. From Oleg, what do you type in the manufacturer tab when you're creating your listing?
Brand name. So I put in the same as the brand name, because what happens is, you know, for any new listing, if you don't have brand registry, you know, you get that brand 5665 error. And then, so of course, the way around that is, you know, you got to put an N not applicable or N-A or N/A. Sometimes different things work. But if you put in the manufacturer your brand name, even during this 1, 2, 3 week process that it takes you to get that brand approved, your brand will show up. So it doesn't say N-A on the actual Amazon listing. So even though you might have brand blank or you might have N-A, but the brand will still show up as long as you have it right there in the manufacturer section.
Okay.
And let's see, next stuff. In Cerebro and Magnet, could it be possible to aggregate the search volume of, say, the most relevant keywords or the ones we select?
Yeah, so you can do that. That was a recent feature in not in Cerebro, but you can do it from Cerebro, is you can put up to 200 keywords into Magnet. So you could do that right there in Magnet. You just select it and then make a new search, or pull the keywords from Cerebro and send it into Magnet. But you put 200 keywords there with a comma on each space, and you can do that. You don't have to put a comma every time. Put that into Frankenstein, the keyword processor in Helium 10, and then just hit this button that says add a comma to every keyword. So you can do that in 3 seconds. Put it into Magnet and boom, it'll show the aggregated search volume right there.
Okay, and let's see. What would be your preferred time frame for doing a listing audit and changing keywords? 3, 4, 6 months?
It depends sometimes, you know, on the niche. Like if something's brand new, I'd maybe look at it even every 2 months, you know, because it changes so much. But if it's something like, you know, a silicone spatula or something, you know, I highly doubt the trends of what people search for is going to change over time. So I might go to the other extreme and maybe just take a look at it every 6, 7 months.
Do you remember the days of silicone spatula?
I remember it was like, people don't talk about it anymore as being cliche, but back in the day, that was the collagen peptides that everybody would use.
That's as a silicone exactly spatula. What it was.
And when is your next, your new Project X coming out?
Funny you mentioned that. We actually just had an internal meeting less than 24 hours ago at Helium 10, and it would have come out already, or we would have done something, but all of the plans that we had were kind of messed up by COVID. You know, like we had some ideas where we were going to like go to people's houses and different things like that, and you know, you haven't been able to really do that, you know, in the last year. So we came up with something that, even though, you know, we're still a few months away from maybe normalcy. Like, you know, like, this is my house. This is not the office. I recreated the office here at my house with the same background and stuff. But once we get back into the office, it's probably, I don't know, end of the summer or something. But we're going to start on something soon for the next Project X.
Bradley, you can say it. It was Tim. He was late.
Yeah.
It's all on Tim.
I had a cover for him, but
okay.
You let the cat out of the bag.
Okay, and is it possible to record your Clubhouse with Kevin King and send it to Helium 10 members?
It's a good question. I remember before in the TOS of Clubhouse, it had said that you can't record, but I see that people do it just fine. So, like, I might look into that. It's a good idea.
Yeah, the terms are, if you have anybody talking, you have to get their permission to talk. So when they bring them up, you can just say, hey, you are going to be recorded. Do you agree? And they say yes. Now it's okay. You're okay. Absolutely okay to record on Clubhouse.
Cool. I think I can do it because I've got this Rodecaster thing here.
Yep.
Where it can record. I've never tried it before, but I know it has that function. So, okay. Not a bad idea.
Yeah. If you want, by the way, just going down a different rabbit hole, contact Paul, you know, Paul Barron.
Oh, yeah. Paul is one of the ones I know who records. I'm like that. And that's what got me thinking, like, maybe it is okay.
Yeah. So I'll ask him he's got a video he sent over to me to do it. So, yeah.
Do you have the Rode or what are you using?
No, I have nothing.
but you're able to record, so
Well, what I'm doing, I'll tell you, if people are interested in recording Clubhouse right now, I have something called Recordcaster or something like that, where like Paul's got this, you know, it's $1,000 for that Rode Master Pro, right? So I went and I got this thing at $3 a month. And as long as I'm recording and as long as I tell people I'm recording, I turn on Recordcaster. And the difference was it, with some of these apps is that your voice levels are different. This is perfect. It's perfect. So I have to test it out a bit more, but I will. I'll send it over to you, by the way, like the app that I'm using. And it's nothing. Paul's got a very complicated way of doing it, and it works perfectly. I think that this might not be at podcast level, but it's acceptable right now. So I was just looking at buying that Rodecaster. Like Hayden does all the mixing for the podcast for us. So I'm not exactly sure how he
mixes. You
know,
you just gave me an idea too. And Facebook user here. Like I always use StreamYard too, I make fun of like, come on guys, don't be so shy. Click that link so that we can see your name. But anyways, Facebook user. See now I don't have to give Facebook user credit for this idea because I don't even know who he or she is. But that could be an interesting, like, if I were to add like a third podcast of the week for the Serious Sellers podcast, it would be like a recording of Clubhouse.
Yeah.
Interesting.
There you go.
Thank you, Facebook user.
We do have a bonus episode on Mondays for Clubhouse. And then,
right. That's what we're doing. We haven't
really recorded and posted them at all, but yeah.
Also, you guys are doing that.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
We haven't uploaded any of like the Clubhouse stuff yet, but we're just doing Clubhouse Extra as like a bonus episode.
On Mondays at 1:30. If you ever want to join us, Bradley, you're happy to join us at 1:30.
send me like a calendar invite. Otherwise I know I'll forget. That's how Paul gets me into his every week, is because it pops up in my calendar, so I'm like, oh, I better hop on the Clubhouse.
Very good.
Yeah, I could do that. All right, and do you have any plans? So this one is for the UK, but there's also one for Australia. Do you have any plans of Helium 10 team visiting the UK?
Absolutely. You know, I'm sure this has got Norm too, but Norm knows how much I like to travel, and we'd always see each other in different events and things. And man, this last year has been rough. So currently, as long as I mean, not now, it looks like we might be able to get vaccinated by the end of May. But my plans for this year, I'm going back to the Maldives again, this time with my family. But I'm doing Japan this year, definitely doing Europe. I'm doing Pakistan as well. Beyond that, we'll see. But Europe for sure. And if I ever go to Europe, I always make a stop in the UK. So we'll definitely do there's lunch with Norm. We'll have lunch with Bradley, but like physically in an actual place for sure this year.
I wish. I got to say this because I just put it in the Centurion group and I know there's a bunch listening, but I just had to give up. I paid with Dave Kettner a full, we were going to do an Amazon Live event. I can't go to Mexico. I can't get my money back. So I'm just giving away a vacation to whoever wants to go. Like everything's paid, all food, all everything. And I haven't been able to get a taker. So
I'll take it.
Yeah. Would you?
I can go to Mexico. Like, is it because you're Canadian?
Yeah. I can't get across the border.
Interesting. Yeah, I went to I've only gone once because I had to go to a pharmacy to nothing illegal, you know, guys. But there's this one, you guys know, I have bad skin, so like I had to go to get this one medication. But I just walk right across the border. It was fine, you know. You can walk into the airport right there. They don't really check. But yeah, I know things are a little bit tougher for you guys up there.
Yeah, I'm in, just to go off topic for a sec. I'm in lockdown. I'm in 100%.
Oh, really? Wow.
I'm in lockdown.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought we had it bad here. Like San Diego, they've been saying it's like the worst. Like we just got like outdoor dining a couple of weeks ago, you know, and where everybody else, you know, you got states like Texas and other places that are almost completely open. But I thought we had it bad here in California, but I guess you got it worse up there.
Oh, man. Yeah, a little bit. Okay, next question.
Let's go.
So if we need to get going at all.
Oh, yeah, Bradley, it's past 1 o'clock.
I'm good. Like 9 times out of 10, I have hard cutoffs. But today, I had cleared my schedule pretty much. Not I can't say it's
for you, Norm. Was it because of Lunch with Norm?
I had a real rough week this week. Like, did you speak at the Billion Dollar Summit, too?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, that actually is the most nerve-wracking one for me. You know, I obviously speak at, you know, what, 85 events a year or podcasts or different things, and I just hop on here like this, and it's great, you know, and everything because I love interacting with people. But there, it's like I get intimidated because I'm like, good grief, these are like, you know, people like Norm, $50 million sellers and $100 million sellers and stuff, and, like, I really got to be on my game. So, like, last night, I woke up, like 3 minutes before I came on here. And I slept like 12 hours because I got a total of like 5 hours sleep the whole week. So I was like, you know, I'm clearing my schedule Friday so I can detox. So we can go up to 10:30 if you wanted to.
Very good. So there's plenty of other questions. All right.
From Alina. Hi, Bradley. Hello, Norm. What are your thoughts on how to make a keyword selection for a totally new product, which does not exist on Amazon, but we know that there's demand because the product combines usages of more existing products?
Did Alina speak at the Billion Dollar Summit too? I don't know if she did, because it was, I don't know if you were in the thing yesterday where it was the hacks or something. Mm-hmm. That was the hacks, and then I kept hearing Kevin say, hey, Alina, come up to the stage, and she never came up, so I wasn't sure if it was that Alina. Anyways, let's see. What are your thoughts on how to make a keyword selection for a totally new product which does not exist, but we know there's demand? So if I do the same exact thing, but I just have to double it now. So, you know, let's say there's two products that I'm kind of combining, you know, well, theoretically speaking, I'm going to do the keyword research on product A, and I'm going to do the same thing on this whole product B and kind of like pick the best out of both. But this is assuming I've done the research to make sure there's demand for it. So, like, in cases like this, this doesn't have to do with keyword research. This is more product research. This is where I especially use the Tim Jordan method of doing those PPC test listings where I'm like, hey, if I'm creating something new where all the indicators are there, my gut feeling is there that this is going to be good, I still don't want to do that that assumption that I'm going to crush it. So what I'll do is I'll, you know, make that combination, set it up there with a PPC test listing, and then see if I can get impressions and things from it. And then if so, then I'll go ahead and move forward with it.
What happens, let's say that, and I've seen just recently, where you see a Dragon Den's product, or Dragon's Den is Canadian for Shark Tank. So, you know, you've got this really incredible product that's there that you know you can make it happen, but there's nothing in existence. Squatty Potty. All of a sudden, mm-hmm. Squatty Potty comes out. It didn't exist before. What would you do for some, or what advice would you give to somebody if they had a unique product that could be in demand, nobody knows about it?
Yeah, well, the thing is, you know, I have always said that before. Hey, you know, Amazon isn't what's those websites? What's those crowdsourcing websites that's escaping my mind? Where you have this idea and then everybody hops in and pitches in? Oh my goodness,
GoFundMe.
Yeah, not GoFundMe.
There's
two of those. There's two main ones. Indiegogo. Indiegogo is one.
Yeah, Kickstarter.
That's not the main one. Kickstarter. Yeah, Kickstarter. Yeah. So I always say, hey, Amazon. I mean, Amazon actually has its own kind of Kickstarter program.
Yeah.
But the regular Amazon is not that. So you absolutely can go viral with a brand new product, and even if you start on Amazon, but it's not going to come from Amazon necessarily. You have to have a way to drive traffic there, because the Amazon starts with searches. And if there's zero search volume for any of the keywords that would come up, you've got to either A, get at the top of searches that maybe aren't related to your product, but it's just a matter of people seeing it and they're going to like it. You know, that's one path. Or B, you've got to drive that traffic from off of Amazon. So, like, don't think of Amazon as a Kickstarter. You could use it to kickstart your product, but you still have to be able to do A or B. In other words, send this outside traffic to get eyeballs on this product, or get on the top of keyword searches that might not be too relevant to your thing, because it's a brand new thing. So how can it be very relevant? But you think that the avatar of the customers who shop on those keywords, all they have to do is see your product and they'll be like, ooh, I want that. Well, you got to do one of those two things.
Nice. Okay, Kels.
Okay, this is from Gideon. What kind of keywords should you put inside the EBC images? Should I repeat the keywords I have on my list, or should I add some new keywords which I don't have on the list?
It depends. You know, like I said, in the beginning of listings, I like repeating. I like repeating keywords just to give it that much more oomph. But like I said, all the products that I launched last year were all these like stuff I hardly have any competition. And usually when it's a matter of that, there's hardly any keywords. There's only so many keywords that could drive a sale to a coffin shelf. it's not like, oh man, I have no space. I only got 5 bullet points and 1,000 characters in description and 250 in my search terms. It's not enough. No, I mean, that's more than enough of what I need to get indexed for all the keywords. But if I was in the more competitive niches, yeah, I would use that for more real estate, not the duplication, but rather just to get even indexed, you know. That I would use almost as, you know, sometimes maybe some of the even Spanish, you know, keywords, you know, you could put into it. You know, the stuff that you don't want in your regular listing.
Yeah, we've seen where, and we do put a Spanish bullet point as our fifth bullet point.
Oh, really? Cool. Yep.
Okay, from Peter, what does it mean when a certain product category on a black box does not show any sales or revenue numbers?
Yeah, so that's usually either one of two things. Either A, there's no BSR. And we see more and more of that. You know, 3 years ago, almost everything had BSR from Amazon. But nowadays, you'll see whole entire categories that don't have a parent or a top-level BSR. The reason? I have no idea. You'd have to ask Amazon about that. So if there's no BSR history, we can't, you know, show an estimation, because that's what we're using for our estimations. The other thing is that if the BSR is unstable, like if it just changed categories or something, or we see some huge spike or some huge dip where it's like, this seems kind of fishy. Like either Amazon made an error, or maybe it just changed categories or whatever the case is, we'll blacklist that product from giving a sales estimation, because we'd rather not give you a sales estimation than put something that's wrong. Those are the two cases.
Okay. And what is the average number of products per brand you've seen from your experience?
I love that name, Dr. Cause Forensic Detectors. You know, when it's Facebook, it's always somebody's name. But when we get these YouTube live, we always get some fun handles there.
Oh, yeah. And his products are incredible.
Cool. I love it. I don't know. I've never taken a look at that. You know, I don't even know if you could come up with a number. You've got some brands that, you know, because of variations and everything else, you know, that's got 2,000, you know, products. And then you've got another guy who might be just as successful with only 5. So I've never taken a look to see the average. So I would say don't, you know, if somebody's just starting out, you know, don't cap yourself. Like say, I want to get up to 20, or I want to get up to 30, and then I'm good for this brand. No, I mean, if you've got a brand that has wide appeal, and then you can do a variety of products, just keep going, you know, just keep going. I mean, the Manny's Mysterious Oddities for Coffin Shelf, just for fun, I'm launching some other stuff there. I don't know if I should say it. No, I'm not going to say it. Okay. There's a new product, guys, that we're going to put on the Manny's Mysterious Oddities that's hilarious. All right. It's hilarious. One product I will say that we are adding to it is I'm in developing right now a large coffin shelf. So like I'm creating a large coffin shelf. We created this year a pink coffin shelf, a purple one. So like, you know, I could go to infinity with that brand as far as spooky things. So like, don't limit yourself. Don't target a certain number. Just do what feels right for your brand.
Let's see. This is from JNR. Is it advisable to do competitor keyword search individual or do a group search?
I do both always. And you can actually do that from the same search with these new filters that we have. So if you're doing it in Cerebro, I always like picking 5, 6, 7 different competitors. But there's a way to do that. We have something called advanced filters at the very bottom that not many people know about. And then what you can do is you can say, hey, show me one where maximum one of these competitors is ranked for in the top 10 or something like that. And so it's almost like you're doing an individual search. So I would say always start with the group to see what the best keywords are for the entire group, but then take it on an individual level using those filters so that you can see maybe there's a keyword that just one of that just one of those competitors are really doing well for, but the others aren't.
Okay. I think we can honestly keep going forever. So
yeah, so we'll let's what's there now. We'll just
Daniel
keep
says
that.
I think I know that. No, it's not that. I didn't do it. This one for that exact reason. For this exact reason. We do test listings on there, and almost all those test listings we're doing. Like there's some egg shelf products that we did a test listing just because I wanted to record an episode of Project X, and we got on order. But there's this one that's going to be so funny that I was like, you know what? There's too many people like Daniel watching our test listings. I can't even do a test listing for this. I'm just going to launch it. So no, you got the wrong one, Dan.
Okay. So do you want to put three more questions?
Yeah, why don't we put a cap? It's the three more questions.
Okay. All right. Let's see. This is from Norman. I'm reviving an old listing with new variations and selling out the old variations. What's my best title and keyword strategy to go with all the new research?
Selling out the old variations. Well, it depends on how similar it is, you know, like if it's just if this variation is just like a multiple, like it's a quantity thing, or if it's a colored thing. I mean, it depends on what kind of variation, you know, you're talking about. But look what worked. If you think that the keywords that people would have searched for your ones you're phasing out are the same as your new ones, well, then you got to look back at your history, you know, either through brand analytics or even through your keyword tracker. And see which ones were converting there, and just transfer those to your new listings. Now, if those new ones are hitting some certain features that those others didn't, well, instead of looking at your internal keyword history, look at the other competitors who have something similar to there, and then pull in those keywords. So it's probably going to be a combination of both of those.
Okay, number two, what should the volume from a niche long tail keywords to include in your listing?
That's different, you know, in a lot of categories. You take something small like the coffin shelf, and if you have something that's like 300 search volume, hey, that's decent, you know. That's still probably top 100 keywords because it's such a small thing. Now you have a silicone spatula or collagen peptides, you know, a 300 search volume might not even be worth it, you know. Like you'd be lucky just to be able to get all the 1,000 search volume. And so there's no like magic number. It's just like you've got to rank it. You got to rank them all, you know. Just be more mindful of relevancy to your niche as opposed to that number, because if it's super relevant, maybe the number is not high now, but it might go higher later. So go by relevancy instead of just the raw number.
Okay, and the last one, pick someone who hasn't done before as the last one. I like okay. Nicholas. I like to export Cerebro's result to work on it in Excel. I can't re-import a keyword list back into Cerebro at a later date to see the SV and the ranking of a handful of competitors. Any updates coming?
Well, you know, we have the you know, my list for keywords, so you absolutely can do that. So even before you get it to Excel, or even after, you would just import you'd want to import this, you know, block of keywords or whatever to your list. It's called the My List in Keywords. It's the link is at the bottom left of your menu, and you'll have that entire history there until you delete it. So you could have lists of 1,000 keywords, a list of 100 keywords, list of 10 keywords, different folders and all that. So that's what you should do.
All right. And that was the last question, Kels? Cool.
Yeah, I think that's the last one we should do.
Perfect. Yeah, we can go on forever. All right. So why don't we get over to the Wheel of Kelsey?
Okay, let's do it. So just give me a second. There it is. Okay, we got lots of entries. I think this was
ever.
So here we go. For a free one-on-one consultation with Bradley.
This is pretty cool.
3, 2, 1.
Usually Kelsey sings you know, the Jeopardy tune. Who won?
Oleg.
Oh, there we go.
You got to send me this app. That's a pretty cool. I got to do that on one of the lives. That is awesome.
Yeah, it's just a, if you just search up Wheel of Names, it's there.
Wheel of Names.
Wheel of Names. Well, Wheel of Kelsey, of course.
Wheel.
All right. Names. Yeah, that's what he was supposed to do. Okay, so Oleg, congratulations. That's a great prize. Bradley, as you're taking, that usually happens only to me when I'm at a restaurant. I'm just in the middle of, you know, a drink or I'm chewing something. The server comes up and says, well, can I? So how do people, or how, like, what's going on? I know you've got a ton of stuff going on. How do people contact or watch what you're doing?
Yeah. I mean, I usually announced, you know, different things and that I'm doing on my Instagram. So you can follow me at H10Bradley. But yeah, I mean, if you guys are already Helium 10 members, I'm sure if we have something big coming, you know, you'll get an email. But I always put fun stuff on my Instagram, so that's a great place to find me there.
All right, fantastic. Okay, sir, thank you for we went an extra 20 minutes. I really appreciate you taking your time, and I hope you can come back to the podcast.
Sure, anytime.
All right, Bradley, we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
All right, everybody. So thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you got something out of this. I think, you know, there was just a lot of information to help to improve your listings and keyword research. So Kelsey.
First off, congratulations, Olaf. That's also frozen. But send me over an email at k@lunchwithnorm.com and we'll set you up with Bradley. Thanks, everyone. I love the support everyone's giving Oleg right now. It's always great to see in our community. And thank you guys for watching. This is a great episode. If you're catching the tail end of this, you can always go over to the YouTube channel. All those episodes go over there. You can watch the whole thing there. And yeah, let us know in our Facebook group if you have any suggestions, if you have any topics, if you want to share a funny meme. That's your place to do it. And we're looking to build this community with you guys. So yeah, make it your own. We want this to be a special place too. So that's Lunch with Norm, Amazon FBA and E-commerce Collective. And I think that's it. Check out our posts on Mondays, 1:30 PM Eastern time. They go for anywhere from like an hour to an hour and a half, but we're trying to upload it at some time too. So, and this podcast suck. That's right.
Okay, so just to let you know that on Monday we've got an incredible topic that a lot of, well, I don't hear it being talked about a lot. We're going to have Michelle Love from EM Ford Insurance come on and talk about different types of insurance for Amazon sellers. What you need, what you don't need. Anyways, a lot of people will contact us about types of insurance that you need to sell on Amazon. Get this, Amazon is enforcing the insurance rule. If you're selling on Amazon, you need to have insurance. If you get a letter from Amazon saying, please provide us with your insurance, you have 30 days to do it or your product is suspended. Anyways, we're going to go through all of that on Monday. I think it's going to be a really good podcast. But until that time, we will see you every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at noon Eastern Standard Time. Thank you, everybody, for watching today. Thank you for being part of the community. And have an incredible weekend. Lunch with the